And our next guest, our TSN Hockey Insider, a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. We say hello and good morning to Dave Poulin. How are you doing this morning, Dave?
Very well, JR. And you're not the only person that's playing highlights of the player they lost this morning because everyone thinks they lost. And I'm laughing because I'm sitting in Toronto and they're shattered at losing Jared McKinnon and never played a game for them. They're just, it's even worse because it's hypothetical.
Yeah, it's true. Or it could be Philadelphia. I'll be honest with you, Dave, and listen, you would know players way better than I do. I've never even heard of the guy that Philadelphia lost, so there we go.
Yeah, actually, they did really like him. Tourinski is his name, Carson Tourinski, and they really liked him. It's the nature of it, right? It really is. But I'm laughing because McCann, hypothetically, you know, they went through all different scenarios on whether he'd be allowed to go to the Leafs lounge, you know, alumni lounge after games. Would he get a Leafs alumni jacket, you know, and all the different factors. But, you know, interestingly enough, guys, the only team effectively that lost two players to Seattle is Pittsburgh. And they lost two pretty good players. They lost Jared McCann, you know, from their roster, and now he went through Toronto, and they acquired a young prospect, Philip Hallander, and a seventh rounder. But then they lost Brandon Tanev, you know, who I think they really wanted to keep. And so, you know, they're a team that, and maybe they had, you know, maybe it was about moving money, and maybe there's another move on the horizon, and we're all kind of waiting for 1 o'clock today when the trade freeze rate, comes off, and we can see exactly what else Seattle did and why they may have chosen some of the players they, you know, elected to choose, and whether that had to do with the team they took them from or there's another deal in the works. You know, they looked like they loaded up on defense. You know, they had a pretty good group of defensemen, a dozen defensemen, and they didn't go out far on money. And, you know, so they have eight guys who will be paid after one full calendar year, and then two of them are my choice, and that they signed Oleksiak and Larson. And, you know, after that, it dwindles really fast. So when this money continues to compress for the cap, they're going to have more and more. So if it stays flat for another year or two, and you start picturing around the NHL who might be coming off deals then, forget about today, that's when Seattle is going to have more money than anybody else even imagines having. So it looks like a different model than Vegas had and a different philosophy. And, you know, again, not to be too hypothetical, but we're looking at the next couple of drafts and kids like Shane Wright coming up, and you're saying, wow, you know, I mean, the draft could be good for the next couple of years. So is that the route that Seattle is going to take?
So, I'm kind of trying to figure out why they went the route that they did. And a lot of general managers, including Brad Treliving, when he lost Giordano, said, listen, the price was just too high for us, you know, what Seattle wanted for us to give up the compensation. So do you think that Ron Francis was, look, I'm gonna ask for a lot, and if I don't get it, I'm going to go kind of in a different route in who I choose and not, you know, obviously, you know, pick a Tarasenko because they're not going to give me anything. And so they've gone with plan B, which is I'm going to go with kind of this lesser known group for the most part and either build, as you said, through the draft or take advantage of teams that are going to run into cap problems in the next couple of years.
It appears that, you know, the latter is going to be the case. Now, they are hard to play against, you know, like I immediately put a checking line together of Brandon Tanev, Yanni Gourde, Mason Appleton. Well, that's a great third line. You know, where they lack is at the top of it. And Jordan Eberle would be a first-line right winger for them. And I guess Jared McCann would be their best offensive pickup at the center position. But, you know, it looks like a team that is going to be able to check and be able to skate and be hard to play against. And defense is their best position by far. I mean, you know, you'd have a top four arguably with, I guess, Giordano and Adam Larson and Oleksiak and Vince Dunn will be in the mix, and the Fleury brothers will be in there. Carson Soucy is a guy from Minnesota a lot of people don't know about, but Minnesota really liked him. The young kid from Detroit was intriguing, Chalowski, who burst onto the scene. He's played over 100 NHL games. He's only 23 and sort of burst onto the scene and then tempered back a little bit in Detroit. So, you know, there's some youth in there, but I guess they can skate and they're hard to play against would be the first two things I would say, you know, about Seattle.
Pooley, do you see as far as salary cap maybe happening now as we get into free agency, then if some teams want to sign some guys and are at a squeeze, they'll turn to Seattle and try to move some contracts and maybe add some real nice picks for Seattle?
I do simmer, that issue is not going to go away.
No.
And in fact, it's going to compound for teams. It's only going to get more significant. And, you know, I mean, maybe the loudest expression of that will come out of Boston later today, and Drager's reporting that they're close to a deal with Taylor Hall. And it looks like it could be somewhere in the four-year, $6 million per year range. So if you looked at that alone and said it's 2021 and he just signed a deal for three less years and the exact same money as he signed in 13-14, so eight calendar years ago. And eight calendar years ago, guys, the cap was $64 million. And that's the deal he got. And now it's $81.5 million, but the market is so tight that he got the same deal for much less term after winning a Hart Trophy, by the way. And so I think you're going to get decisions made by players, and Taylor Hall was in Boston for a brief period of time, but, you know, by all indications, likes it, thinks it's a good situation for him. So I think you're going to start to see those decisions made, but there's still contracts, significant contracts that are, you know, weighted around teams' cap situations, and that's only going to get more advantageous for Seattle and worse for everybody else.
When you talked to this yesterday, you had put together, I think, 28 of the 30 picks that you said, and you said, you know what, I think I've got a playoff team here on a not very deep Pacific division. Now you've seen the actual picks they've made. Do you think that Seattle is a playoff team as it sits now?
As it sits right now, it's going to be a battle for them. I'd have them in, they'd be fighting for the fourth spot, 4, 5, 6. You know, I'm looking at that West division, and the only clear cut choices ahead of them right now today would be Vegas and Edmonton. You would like to say Calgary would, but we don't know how Calgary's going to settle. Anaheim is up in the air for me. Vancouver is really up in the air. Vancouver has more players than anyone else does. I mean, it just seems like they have lots of players, and we just don't know how their team is going to merit out. You know, I have a little system where I do their NHL roster, and then their AHL roster, and then their prospects. And I go through it. I do it three times a year, like extensively. So I can look at a page and look at an entire organization. And with them on their NHL side, I have, like, I don't know, like 20 guys. But I don't know who's NHL players and who's not. And I don't even know who's there and who's not. So I think they've got a ton of questions to answer. There could be nobody quieter in the NHL right now than San Jose. Like, do you hear a thing about San Jose? You know, Doug Wilson, who used to be involved in every single deal going on, is really, really quiet. Now, I think the one team of the California group that may be a little bit on the upswing because of prospects, and I know they're looking to do something, is the LA Kings. And, you know, they made the Arvidsson deal and brought a good NHL player in, and they've still got Kopitar, and they've still got, you know, a couple pieces. Jonathan Quick is still there, and that, and Drew Doughty is still, you know, a really good player. So I think they come up a little bit, but right now I'd have Seattle fighting 4, 5, 6 in that division.
And to that, Pooley, I guess fresh and new, pretty good system under Dave Hakstol, but their inability to score, as bad as Calgary and Vancouver may be, their high-end skill still has to trump what Seattle's going to put on the ice, does it not?
Well, it does. And Vancouver in particular, Simmer. I mean, you know, Elias Pettersson didn't play last year. I mean, he didn't play. And, you know, what effect does he have on a Brock Besser? And also, when you talk about a player like Pettersson, you plug him in, all of a sudden now Horvat's your second-line center. He's not your first-line center. And, you know, and what effect does that have on a JT Miller? And so, yes, they should be better. And once again, I just don't know where the rest of the roster is. Like, they went out a couple of years ago and signed, like, Antoine Roussel and Jay Beagle. Like, where do they fit in? You know, Brandon Sutter's a free agent. There's just so many names out there. Jake Virtanen, what are they doing with him? And so I think they've got to figure out their lineup on defense. They get thin in a hurry. They, you know, it looks like they'll lose Edler. Hamonic's a free agent. You know, so they get thin in a hurry. And Nate Schmidt apparently, you know, wants to be on the move out of Vancouver as well. So when I look at a team like that and think if they do all the work that they should be doing, then that's going to shake up their roster. And it's also going to shake up other teams' rosters. So, boy, oh boy, you know, we're sitting here on July 22nd. There's a lot of work to do for a lot of teams right now in the National Hockey League.
Ottawa loses Joey Decord. I think you had said yesterday you thought it might be Tierney, and those were the two at the top of, I think, a lot of people's list here in Ottawa as who they potentially could lose. I know it was a small body of work, but what were your thoughts on Joey Decord? And secondly, do you think them losing a prospect in the position, they still go six deep from NHL to prospects, do you think in any way that changes their number 10 pick in the first round regarding the two highly rated goalie prospects in tomorrow's draft?
I don't think it changes things for them. You know, Joey Decord's small body of work, he was an intriguing kid to me, even back to his college decision to go to a brand new program at Arizona State and then really bring that program to light. I mean, he's essentially starting over for the second time with an NHL expansion team. But he clearly, you know, will embrace the challenge. And he brought that program to life at Arizona State. It was his goaltending that put them on the map there. And, you know, a really small body of work in the NHL. And I think we all liked what we saw. We saw athleticism. We saw, you know, a prospect in his early 20s who came in and, you know, he didn't have a great win-loss record or anything. He didn't play a great number of games, played 9 NHL games, but he was someone who made an impression on you. But I don't think that changes their grouping in terms of who they pick. I think they'll have, you know, if they do in fact have an, you know, I mean, you go back and forth and it's which one of the two goalies, you know, it might be. Wallstedt apparently appears to be, you know, a little bit higher on most boards than Sebastian Coss is. But I don't think it changes it, because if you said today you're going in and you said, okay, well, we think we're going to take Jesper Wallstedt with the 10th pick in the draft. And I don't mind taking a goalie high if your scouts have them high. And I just don't. I don't think it's an issue at all. I think if you can lock in that position for years to come, then you do it. But that being said, if, you know, one player in that first nine gets out of order, so, you know, I'm going to pick a name out of a hat, pick a, you know, Simon Edvinsson, the big defenseman in Sweden, say he's slated to go in the top five, and all of a sudden he gets out of sequence, one guy, and it changes the top nine ahead of you, then you have to evaluate that. And, you know, I think I never minded having a goalie in there, and goalies are so hard to put in the sequence, guys. I think everybody handles their goaltending different, but when you sit in draft meetings, you know, the first time I sat in an NHL draft meeting and they're putting their lists together, you know, I remember leaning to the guy next to me saying, where are the goalies? Oh, they're on a list over there. It was almost in another room. Like, I'm like, okay, do they get to come into the, you know, the adults room at some point? But they merge their lists. Most teams merge their lists, and then they insert the goalies afterwards. And they do it geographically, and then you know, they have this whole separate goalie list and goalie world. And teams now are focusing a lot more energy on goalie departments and goalie scouting and having these goalie lists. But now you've got to walk over with that list and insert it into your main scouting list. And it's really, really challenging to do that. And, you know, you've got to have a goalie voice. You've got to have a strong goalie voice in that room. Mm-hmm. And because there are scouts that just say, well, I don't do goalies. You know, it's not what I do. And you know that. And so I think I'd be comfortable, by all accounts, it sounds like, with one of those two at that position. But so much depends on what happens in the 1 through 9 spots. And the picks that I'm intrigued with for Pierre Dorion and his group are 39 and 42. Because when you have two picks like that at the top of the second round, and they are now at the top of the second round, right, with 32 teams. Is someone going to make a play on those two picks because someone's left on the board they really like? And in a year when so little scouting was done, everyone in the NHL right now, guys, thinks they have a diamond in the rough. Everyone thinks they have a guy that didn't play this year in the OHL who they really liked as an underage, who really made an impression somewhere along the line. Everybody has one or two or three of those guys. And so those two picks, 39 and 42, could turn into a valuable player for Ottawa, because the other thing you've got to factor in, the volume of picks that Pierre's had over the last few years, you can only have so many players at a certain age group, because if everyone's at the same age group, now you've got waiver issues after 3 or 4 years in the league, and, you know, you've got all these different issues. They've got 11 picks next year, and they have such a strong group of players between pick at 18 and 23 years old that they're going to start to lose those players on waiver situations. And you can't have too high a volume in there. So I could see those two picks, 39 and 42 for Ottawa, you know, causing a little commotion at the draft.
Yeah, last year they used the one on Murray, one on Stepan. We'll see what happens with that. Pooley to the goaltenders. In the case of Wallstad, if he is a blue-chip talent, if he's compared to Vasilevsky or Rask, if you're Seattle, based on the rest of the draft, would you ever take a goaltender at the two spot?
I think that's too high. I think you'd be working to move it down. You know, I've seen a number of those kids play now, that top group, you know, in some of the U18 stuff. And I don't, you know, that Matty Beniers certainly looks like, you know, and I watched him, he was an underage playing up and he made a huge impression on me. And, you know, the first time I saw him, he was the only uncommitted player to college. He was so young and he was just terrific. That would have been an underage at the U18s, like long before the World Juniors. And, you know, an intriguing talent like that looks like he may be number two. McTavish has really risen and he's an ingredient. And if I'm looking at the type of players that they took, the Tanev and Gord and, you know, even Donskoy and Appleton and Pitlick and those types of players, that's the Mason McTavish model, right? Hard to play against and, you know, aggressive and brings people to the party and all those different things. So I think that's too high. If I'm doing that, Zimmer, then I am moving the pick to a place where my scouts feel comfortable I can get that goalie, whether it be, you know, 7, 8, or 9.
So at the end of the day, is Marc Bergevin heaving a sigh of relief that he still has Carey Price with still 5 more years and $44 million, and who knows what's going on with his knee and his hip still in his organization, or is he maybe a little bit disappointed that he doesn't have $10.5 million of cap space to work with?
No, I think he's thinking the poker game worked, JR. I think he's thinking that the best case scenario now is that Carey Price gets healthy, that Jake Allen carries him through the first part of the season, you know, as a really, really strong 1A and gets them on board. And then in a worst case scenario is Carey Price, you know, really healthy down the stretch, because we know he can do when he's really healthy down the stretch. We just watched it firsthand. So if he gets back for the last, you know, portion of the season and is healthy and can lead Montreal again down the stretch and into the playoffs, I think overall that Bergie's happy with the way it happened. I think the initial plan wasn't to lose Carey Price. It was to protect Jake Allen, and that worked.
What does it say about guys like Domi? 1 year left at $6 million. Zucker left 2 years at around the same money as to where their game is at. But especially in the case of Domi, when you look offensively where they're at, and wouldn't have been a whole lot of risk at 1 year.
It wouldn't have been. There was only 8 players, including the two guys that signed, right, Alexiak and Larson. That made a total of 8 players that have more than 1 year of contract left for Seattle. And, you know, it wouldn't have been. And that's personal flavor in that room, Zimmer. And we don't know the makeup of that room yet. You know, I mean, we know the names of the scouts, but we don't know what their thought process is as a group. And, you know, Max has really fallen out of favor in terms of a lot of people, the way they look at his game. I mean, this guy had 70-plus points a couple years ago and, you know, was a first-line center in Montreal or a first-line player in Montreal. And really dynamic, and that looked like just a terrific trade for Montreal. And then you look at it and say, it didn't work out moving forward into Columbus when it should have been a situation that would have been very attractive for him. So, you know, he's got one thing to do, and that's put it back on the rails. And, you know, and I think Max Domi will work hard to get that done.
By all accounts, the deal that Adam Larson signed in Seattle was offered to him by the Edmonton Oilers. It, you know, on the surface, you'd look at it and go, why would a guy ever go to an expansion team when he's playing with Connor McDavid? So why do you think he did what he did?
Just personal preference. That's a personality thing. And, you know, if the deal was in fact the exact same, then the player decided he needed to change. And we've talked about Edmonton needing to change and, you know, what they're doing in Edmonton wasn't good enough. And you're saying, well, Ken Holland's going to change that. It's going to take time, but he's going to change that. And Adam Larson said, as a player, I have a chance to change it myself. And the excitement of going somewhere new. And you know, guys, you know, I've had a number of people reach out to me to watch the show last night, not to see who the players were, but to see how it was handled. And, you know, it was handled with a lot of flair and a lot of fashion and, you know, a lot of this, Seattle's the greatest city in North America and look at how great we're going to be. And, And that's intriguing to people. And so to me, that's a very personal decision for Adam Larson that said, you know, I've been in Edmonton now, I've been in New Jersey, and I have an opportunity to go to a new market and get a whole fresh start on life, and I'm going to do that.
On a much smaller scale, I think Branstrom goes through that here in Ottawa, where, hey, you're not trying to crap on the player, but you're part of the Stone trade. You're the centerpiece. On Larson, would that have gotten old after a while? No, quieted down this year, but overall, just, hey, fresh and new and no pressure.
Yeah, that's part of it, and I think why it quieted down is because he played better, and Taylor Hall wasn't the MVP of the league. You know, it was a direct contrast when Larson first got there. I mean, there was a lot of what else is coming in the trade. You know, we couldn't have just traded Taylor Hall for Adam Larson. And Larson's a pretty good player, and he's, you know, he's a shutdown guy. He's not a Hart Trophy winner. He's not an MVP. So the fresh start is, I think, is really good for him.
Speaking of Edmonton, Zach Hyman is reportedly in Edmonton, and if he's visiting the city, I'm presuming that both he and the team have interest in him signing there as a free agent. Whether his rights are going to be owned by the Oilers at that point or whether they wait until next week, it appears he's out of the financial realm of the Leafs being able to sign him. He's 29 years old. He's had some injury concerns, but boy, he's been an effective player when he's played with star players. So do you think that's a fit in Edmonton? And if it goes to 8 years, what's your level of concern on that for Hyman? For the Oilers, I mean.
Yeah, it would be high at 8 years for sure. And, you know, I mean, if you're Connor McDavid, you're pushing hard for this player because you've seen that he fits with really good players. He's a really good complementary piece. And I do think the Leafs come back after he gets, you know, home from Edmonton and makes a hard play for him. Now, hard play might not involve the dollars that he's going to see in Edmonton. It might not involve the term he's going to see in Edmonton. But it's going to involve, why would you invite a question about how you fit somewhere when you know you fit perfectly here? And, you know, so if you're Toronto, you're trying to do everything you can to remove the money equation from it and make it about fit. And make it about, you know, unfinished business, and make it about you're a Toronto kid, and, you know, anything you can do to sell the fact that your situation is more important than a monetary figure. And that's basically all they can do. Now, have, you know, once again, did they think they were going to lose Kerfoot in the expansion draft and gain $3.5 million and have that to play with? Did they think they were going to have some of their other situations cleared up? They've still got a goaltending situation here that they have to clear up financially, with limited money left. So, you know, I do think Toronto still makes another hard play at Zach Hyman. I don't think that's done yet. And once again, guys, when you go out and look at something else and you've been hearing how great it is somewhere else, and you go look at it for yourself and you walk into an environment and you really drill down and now you're saying, can I see myself here through my eyes? That very well may be a yes, and it very well may be a no. And you know, they're trying to make their superstars happy for sure. And I think the R&H deal was part of it, you know, because he's, you know, tight with Connor McDavid apparently and, you know, a very popular guy in the room, and they got him at their price. Now, can they do the same thing to add to one up and bring Zach Hyman in for one of those two guys? And I still think Toronto's going to make another hard play at it, guys. I don't think it's done yet. Now, I'm not saying that with any inside information, because at 10 o'clock this morning, it could announce, you know, that the deal's been done. I'm just saying it from the gut standpoint of a player who's, you know, been a free agent. When you look at other places, sometimes they're not as appealing as what you have.
Should Hyman sign for those types of dollars that are mentioned, term, mix in R&H, 2 years to Smith, adding Keith, losing Larson? Are you a little nervous about where the Edmonton program's going?
Yeah, I don't know if overall they're better. You know, you've got to be better at the bottom of the day. And is you know, you've lost a couple big pieces in Klefbom and Larson on defense, and your defense wasn't great to start with, and you've lost two big pieces. So, you know, and Mike Smith had a great year, but you're adding another year onto his age. So I'm not sure they're better, Simmer.
All right, good stuff. Always appreciate the time and the insight. Tomorrow's draft day, and we'll see what happens when the rosters unfreeze at 1 o'clock today, be via trades or whatever, signings. This should be an interesting day. Thanks for the time, Dave, and we'll chat tomorrow.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.